It's another week and it's another episode of The Buffer. I feel like I should get my really good sports announcer voice on, because on this week's episode of The Buffer, we're pitting two sports documentaries against each other. And one has perhaps the greatest narrator of all time. And we'll get to all that in a second. You found The Buffer podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor.fm, wherever you find your podcast. We are there. Rate, review, subscribe. And thanks for being here. My name is Tony Tone.
And I'm on mute. I'm Joel Krausar. I old manned it. You talk your sports announcer.
And I'm on mute, everybody.
You talk your sports announcer voice, and I got mine used last night, that's for sure. An hour and a half of straight sports talk interviewing. No breaks, no commercials. Classically trained sportscaster? Is that something I can add to my resume? Thank goodness for all that broadcast training at college.
A lot of talking.
Man. Whew. And switching cameras and switching.
I told you last night, I would have just been like, you guys got to cut to something. Like, I gotta get up. I got to stretch my legs.
I didn't even get a chance.
You got to give me 5 minutes.
Thank God they gave me a comfortable chair. If I hadn't had a comfortable chair, it would have been a nightmare. True. If I was sitting in the folding chair, card table chair that I'm sitting in right now for an hour and a half, I'd be struggling. I really got to somehow build out a podcast studio in my house so that I can be more comfortable and put this all together. The guest bedroom. That's where I'm at.
I feel you. And it's the irony is not lost on me that we are recording this episode on Friday, August 20th. Last for you, at least, Joel, this is your last free Friday that won't involve high school football. So across the country, it seems like high school football is going to be kicking off. And I, for one, am looking forward to watching high school football and college football and the NFL. But have you thought about that? This is like your last free Friday for 9 weeks.
It might be longer than that too, because I might be doing some work for the state as well. So it could be November, the week before Thanksgiving, before I'm done. And and by the way, I'm coaching my son's youth tackle football team, along with a couple other former high school teammates. Our kids are all the same age, so we're doing our we're Pop Warner coaches this fall, and I'm not the head coach, thank God, so I can just show up and run drills that they tell me to run. But no, it's, and I wouldn't have it any other way. I love Friday Night Lights. Have been a part of my life since I was 5 or 6 years old as a ball boy here at our high school. My dad was a physical therapist and athletic trainer for our high school football team here in town, and so I grew up literally on the sidelines. And when I was 20 years old, got my first high school coaching football coaching job at a Catholic high school, and then a college coaching job, and then came back to Muscatine in 2006 and was a football coach there, and then was a football coach in Wilton, Iowa for 5 years. So Friday nights have been a part of my my life for I'm 39, so 33 years I've been on a sideline or in a stadium pretty much every Friday.
It's just wild when you think about it, and it is definitely a welcome return, I would say, as we continue all kind of navigating this pandemic that seems like it's never going to end, although we hope that it does. Football is very popular. I mean, just as much as the Field of Dreams Major League Baseball game was the most viewed primetime game they've had in years, the same, I think, will be said, Joel, with football returning at all levels, whether it is high school, collegiate, or at the pro level. I think viewership will be up. Certainly attendance will be up, as a lot of these places are letting fans back in or going towards a more full capacity. So it should be good. And I like the fall, you know. I don't want the warm weather to go away just yet, because where we're located in Iowa, that means that cold and snow and ice is on the way. But I do like hooded sweatshirt weather, if you'll have it.
I ordered my snowblower today. So I'm getting a new snowblower. I ordered it today. It was in stock. So I ordered it. And that's gonna be here next week, so
it's kind of depressing.
I don't need to use it for a long time, hopefully. But I need a new snowblower, and I can't wait, because that first snowfall, they all sell out. Like, you don't want to, you got to be prepared in August for November and December. This is depressing. Let's stop talking about snow.
You really do. You can't sleep on it. All right, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give everybody just a very quick overview of content, both movies, TV shows, documentaries that are either releasing today or in the next week or two. So it's Friday, August 20th. You can check out The Night House, which looks kind of creepy. Paw Patrol, the movie, is not only in theaters, but it's streaming on Paramount Plus. And I know that because at this moment, three out of my three kids and wife are watching it.
Three out of three.
So they're checking out Paw Patrol. Three out of three, everybody. Well, because Lucy, my youngest, wasn't there, and then she just kind of came back downstairs. You know, kids sometimes forget where they're at, and then she was like, hello? The Protégé with Michael Keaton is in theaters, reminiscent.
That sounds good.
Hugh Jackman.
I want to see The Protégé.
Yeah, that looks interesting. So that's in theaters. Oh, you want to see Protégé? See, I'd like to see both. I feel like the Hugh Jackman one in theaters and HBO Max. You've got Sweet Girl on Netflix. And keep in mind, these are all released now, available now. And then next Friday, August 27th, it's Candyman, which looks really good. And you saw that on Netflix. And then you've got Vacation Friends with John Cena and Lil Rel Howery on Hulu, which I watched a preview for today for the first, and it looks pretty good. So, Joe, there's a lot going on. It's August 20th. I can't believe it. We're sitting here just a few weeks away from Labor Day weekend, and then you'll blink and September will be over, and we'll be talking about Halloween costumes and trick-or-treating and horror movies. It's just, time flies, to say the least. I couldn't believe, to kind of segue into the battle this week, there's also something that sigs there, and that is Hard Knocks on HBO and HBO Max. And I have been a Hard Knocks fan for a long time. So this week in the Buffer Battle, we're going to have Hard Knocks, Training Camp with the Dallas Cowboys, taking on Untold, Malice at the Palace, which is on Netflix. I want to defer to you since you are the football guy, but I just want to say the guy, and I think his name is Steve, that narrates Hard Knocks is unbelievable. The NFL film.
It's Liev Schreiber
who narrates. He's like one of my. That's who it is.
Yeah,
it's
Hard Knocks. Hard Knocks is Liev Schreiber. Steve Sable is who you're thinking of, who narrates NFL films. But no, Liev Schreiber is the narrator of Hard Knocks.
But didn't NFL film? Correct me if I'm wrong. Did Steve Sable not do Hard Knocks at one point?
He may have done it at the beginning, but I think 6 or 7 years ago they switched over to Liev Schreiber as the narrator. Well, I don't have the timeline in front of me, but I know who you're talking about, and I think his dad was the narrator prior to him. Steve Sable's dad started NFL films, and he's the one who's like, the autumn wind is a raider. Like, he's the one who narrates that whole famous diatribe. But no, Liev Schreiber, I'm 99% sure, is the voice of Hard Knocks, and I need to look it up.
And the nice thing is, and I'll stop talking after this, I just think, you know, I'm a Chicago Bears fan. You're a Miami Dolphins fan, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And it doesn't, in my opinion, it doesn't matter whichever team Hard Knocks is featuring. I'm all in, and I like watching it because they give you so much of that inside access. So what have you seen so far, Joel? Because the difference with this battle is Hard Knocks, Dallas Cowboys is going to continue, and then Untold, The Malice at the Palace. For those that are listening, that is just a one. Now, the Untold, I think, is going to be a series, but Malice at the Palace is just kind of one documentary. So it's like an hour and a half long. But what have you seen on Hard Knocks with the Dallas Cowboys that you like, besides Dax Shepard being healthy or not really?
That is obviously the biggest story, but I've been a Hard Knocks head for several years now as well, just because I absolutely love the behind the scenes side of football. I think that the average person kind of always thought that football was these Neanderthals running, you know, headlong into one another, and that is a part of it. But I think seeing the coaches' preparation and how much that they have to plan it's been really what Hard Knocks does well. And they obviously have to find compelling stories, and they've really done that pretty well the last 2 weeks, or only 2 weeks into the season. And it helps when the starting quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys is coming off a catastrophic injury last year, where Dak Shepard's ankle was literally aimed the wrong direction after a tackle, and that's been surgically repaired. But then his shoulder's having issues, so he's having MRIs, and they're holding him out, and they're not sure if he's healthy. And so that's really some compelling TV. And Mike McCarthy, the head coach of the Cowboys, I mean this kind of with a compliment, the season's been kind of boring. I think they're a boring team. I think good teams are boring, if that makes any sense.
They're banking on Jerry Jones to be more of, I don't want to say the star, but certainly when you have an eccentric owner that is a celebrity in his own right. Do you feel like, because it seems like Jerry's been there, but he always kind of looks like he's, don't put me on too long. Like,
well, I think Steven, his son, who kind of is the, mm-hmm. I think he's the general manager. He's probably telling, hey, Dad, we need to just not be the story here. Well, there's enough eccentric billionaires in the news right now. You don't need to be the next one. And the thing I like, though, is Ezekiel Elliott and Dak Shepard are these two superstar players, and they seem to be pretty good friends too. And Ezekiel Elliott had a moment in this last episode. I played the game. There are some really uncomfortable parts about playing football. The pant situation is one of those things, especially on a hot day, and Zeke needed baby powder. Right. And that's just a real life thing. I think it's good that fans get to see that. Maybe if they haven't lived it and experienced the need for some powder lubrication and protection in those particular regions. But when Zeke Elliott said, "Man, now when I fart, it's gonna look like a big cloud coming out of my pants," I about died. I was laughing so hard when he said that, because I don't know how many funny things I've heard said at a football practice as a coach, as a player. Some of the best one-liners you'll ever hear come from football players. And I love how Hard Knocks has these guys mic'd up and they catch some of that. But with one of the things of this last episode, though, that they really, really captured was this story of Azara, I can't remember his last name off the top of my head. He's a player who's from the Ivory Coast, and Kamara is his last name. Asa Kamara, I want to say, is his name. And he's a defensive end. He's a second year player out of Kansas, and he emigrated from the Ivory Coast. You know, he talks about, you know, the Civil War that he saw as a kid. And what Hard Knocks does a great job of doing is finding this marginal player that you just invest yourself in, and now you're going to follow it till the end to see if he gets cut or if he makes the team. And they go week by week, so they're there. I mean, these editors, they work their butts off, because they are cutting this thing late into the game. Like, these preseason games happen Sunday, and they're cutting, and it airs at 9 o'clock on Tuesday night. So, I mean, the sheer mechanics of Hard Knocks is so impressive.
It's crazy. But,
the content is just so much fun. I hate the Cowboys. I thoroughly dislike them. But I always watch to see how many Hawkeye players are on the team. Like, Brandon Smith caught a touchdown pass for the Cowboys on Sunday, and he's an undrafted free agent wide receiver out of Iowa. And so just seeing these backup quarterbacks kind of poop their pants when their starting quarterback's not hurt. They're figuring out that they've got to play all preseason now. It's just fun. And the assistant coaches, this assistant coach for the Cowboys, their defensive line coach, who is from England. He grew up in England. He played in NFL Europe, and he's now found his way, you know, in the NFL as an assistant coach. Those are cool stories too, because you don't think of the NFL and football being really a global game, because it really is kind of an American specific sport. But to have, you know, a player from the Ivory Coast who never played football, played soccer growing up, and now all of a sudden he's an NFL football player. You've got a guy who played for the Scotland Claymores in NFL Europe, who now has found his way as the defensive line coach for the Cowboys. And listening to some of the personality of some of these players, the one player who can mimic and imitate his British defensive line coach, and he's like running a meeting with the British accent, just the silliness that happens in a football camp. I'm nostalgic for it because I miss those days. I don't miss getting hit. I don't miss tackling. I don't even really miss coaching that much. I miss the goofing around and those off moments in between when you're working hard. And Hard Knocks does a really good job of capturing the personality of these guys and some of the nuances of it. I don't think people realize how smart you have to be to play football at that level.
Yeah, no, you're right. What they've done so well is it's like the model you follow on any series that you're interested or invested in. Like, it's not fair to compare it to like the White Lotus, but stick with me. There's all these like subplots, and that's what Joel mentioned, is they'll kind of find these players and they have unique stories and they share them. And then in the next scene, you'll be back with Dax Prescott and Zeke and, you know, the ownership group or Mike McCarthy. But they do such a good job of that. I mean, again, you said it. Kudos to the editors. They do a masterful job of making you drawn in. They, you know, the cuts are never, they're never fun, especially when it's those players that you do have some emotional skin in the game. And then, yeah, so it's five episodes. And it literally, what I love is it just leads right up to the start of the season. So you kind of feel like, well, this team is at the point that they feel like they are ready to compete competitively in the NFL. And then they go and they're kind of like off into the world, so to speak. I had Dax Prescott as my fantasy quarterback when that injury happened.
The Tone Rangers awful. Didn't do so well with that that injury.
We were cruising because he was good for, you know, 30 points a game or whatever. And I've always, you know, I was an Emmett Smith fan. So I grew up in the Chicago suburbs, certainly a Walter Payton, Chicago Bears fan. But I also really like Emmett Smith a lot. I liked him as a player, like him as a person. He was a hell of a running back, you know. So I'm not going to say that I was a Cowboys fan, but I am enjoying Hard Knocks training camp with the Cowboys thoroughly. I'm not sure how I feel about Mike McCarthy. Feel like
I like
Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers ran him out of Green Bay because they didn't get along. Aaron Rodgers, little bit of, you know, I mean, rightfully so, he's the guy. He can make those kind of decisions or push for things to happen. But yeah, I think, you know, McCarthy is a good fit in Dallas. And you know, Cowboys for a long time were quote unquote America's team, and they've been struggling. You know, that's a struggling franchise that really, I'll be honest, I don't see them. Even if Dax is healthy, I don't see them in the big game, right? I don't think they're at that level.
So if you go back and watch this last episode, there's a moment where there's a coach, an older coach, talking, the easy offensive line coach, talking at the beginning of one of the meetings about cadence. And that coach's name is Joe Philbin. And Coach Philbin.
Oh, I love Joe. He's great. Former Dolphins head coach.
Dolphins head coach, but more importantly, he was the first offensive line coach that Kirk Ferentz hired at the University of Iowa. So he was at Iowa from 1999 to 2004, 2005. And so I got to know Coach Philbin on the camp circuit. And so I was so excited that he got some press time and some airtime, because he's kind of had a bad rap for how it kind of ended as the offensive coordinator for the Packers and as the head coach of the Dolphins. There is not a better coach, like technician and teaching. I love when they go in depth and you sit in these meetings with these coaches and you get to watch them actually teach. And teach the skill, because all these guys are great athletes. It's the ones who can master the skill the best. And Philbin, the Harvard grad, is one of the best technicians and teachers of the game. And I like too the fact that it's on HBO. They don't have to bleep all this stuff out. Like it's like you hear them say, "Cut their bleeping knees out." You know, it's just it brings you back and fun watching these just super skilled coaches. And Aaron Donald for the Los Angeles Rams and that scrimmage, just seeing how scary some of these guys are. They're just
no kidding.
99 for the Rams is a bad man. He's the best, in my opinion. He's the best player in football.
He's really good. I loved the Hard Knocks in 2012 when it was the Dolphins and Joe Philbin was coach. He was great. And again, that's where I don't know if I'd want to see it. And I don't know if the Bears have ever done it. I don't think they have. Don't quote me on that.
They should have done it when they had Cutler. That would have been epic.
That's the thing. Like, I don't think I want. I think that just hurts Cutler because he does think he's the man.
I like Jay Cutler. I'm on record of liking Jay Cutler. I watched his reality show with his wife. Maybe that's a guilty pleasure. I should admit.
Yeah,
ex-wife. Just, sorry.
What did he lose? He lost some type of endorsement this week because of a stance he took with regards to policies with face masks in schools. Jay Cutler has got some hot takes because that's what people are wondering. What is Jay Cutler? Smoking Jay Cutler, think of the coronavirus pandemic.
Well,
Jay,
over to you. He threw his hat in the ring. He's going to maybe run for school board. That's how it became a. So he disagreed with his children's school board decision. So he publicly said, "I'm considering running." Became Perfect. A national news story for 24 hours, and I don't know who he lost his endorsement with, but he's going to land on his feet. I think he'll be just fine. So. I don't think Kristen took him for too much money.
Well, he's probably getting alimony. She's definitely worth more than he is. I'd be curious to, we could even, depending on what advances this week, it'd be interesting to see assembling like a top three best seasons of Hard Knocks because it's been around for so long.
I don't know if she did. He amassed over $127 million in career earnings as an NFL quarterback. I don't think she's worth that much.
I feel like... am I going to have to Google this?
I'm Googling it right now. Don't worry.
Let's see. Kristen Cavallari net worth. What are they?
30 million. Yeah. She's a 30 million net worth.
That's it. I thought she did better. I thought she did better than Smokin' Jay. Maybe she's got more liquid assets than he does. I don't know. Be curious. All right.
He's a Vanderbilt grad too. He's going to land on his feet. He'll be just fine.
Hard Knocks training camp with the Dolphins, HBO, HBO Max, taking on this week in the buffer battle. Something that this is why I love the world of streaming content. So it was, I think it was Monday or Tuesday night of this week. My kids were kind of falling asleep. I had the remote in my hand for once. I was on Netflix. I was doing the scroll and there was Untold Malice at the Palace. I clicked on it and it started to autoplay kind of the trailer. And I was immediately drawn in back to that November night in 2004 when the Indianapolis Pacers were taking on the defending NBA champion Detroit Pistons, at Auburn Hills, and all of a sudden the game is the Pacers are coasting, and then it gets a little physical with Ron Artest and Big Ben Wallace, and things kind of turn into a friendly skirmish, and then the next thing you know, a fan in the stands throws a beer at Ron Artest. He goes into the stands, and I can tell you and everybody that's watching, in 2004, in November of 2004, I was a college student at St. Ambrose University in Davenport, Iowa. We were at a bar watching, not really watching the game, right? You're not watching the game at a bar. But we started to notice that they kept replaying, and then we were just drawn in. And I'll always remember sharing that experience with my roommates and friends. This documentary, Untold, Malice at the Palace, is so compelling. It really does a good job of explaining, hey, you know what? There's more to this story. And here's what you don't know is that people that were involved in this were prosecuted and they were able to find out exactly who threw the beer that initiated this whole thing. and they talk to the guy that was on the court that squares up with Ron Artest. And the thing is, like, not a lot of remorse out of these Piston fans. Really interesting to get the firsthand accounts from Ron Artest, Meta World piece, from Jermaine O'Neal, from Reggie Miller, who I've always liked, even though he was in Indianapolis Pacer and I'm a Chicago Bulls fan. Steven Jacks, like, just, you know, that Pacers team, Joel, was really good at basketball and they were poised to make a run. And the thing that sucks, and I didn't realize this, is that was Reggie Miller's last season. So Untold Malice at the Palace goes deep into this brawl and into what happened. Before it gets to that point, it gives you the backstory with the former Pacers ownership about how they put this team together and Jermaine O'Neal's story going from high school to the NBA. And then the brawl happens. And then there's all these ridiculous suspensions, in my opinion, and a lot of hot takes. And the next thing you know, Reggie Miller is like, yeah, I decided to be done. And what a great career he had. Except for the fact that he never won an NBA championship. And it's crazy, Joe, when you think about there are, you know, Hall of Fame basketball players like Charles Barkley, like Karl Malone, like Patrick Ewing, like Reggie Miller that never won an NBA championship. And it's because they were in the same league that Michael Jordan was in. But it's just crazy to think about that. And I really feel like, I feel bad for Jermaine O'Neal because his legacy is tied to this one night in November. And what was so interesting is the players, Artest included, would tell you, like, they weren't going to really fight with Big Ben Wallace. Like, they even said, we're all friends. This is just like a skirmish. And the fans are the ones that, shame on them, Joel. They caused it. I mean, you know, certainly you'd love to think that professional athlete maybe doesn't go into the stands, but in the heat of the battle, when emotions are high and somebody throws a beer at you, like, I don't know. It's really, really well done. And, you know, Steven Jackson, like, he doesn't want to talk about this anymore. And he's pretty clear on that. But I just hope that for people that are watching, if you're into sports, even if you're not super familiar with this particular game, and again, this is a great example. Once again, I'm not a Pacers fan. I'm not a Pistons fan. But this, I was hooked from the tip-off of Untold Malice at the Palace. It's that good. And it's on Netflix, so there's no excuse for you to not check it out.
Well, and there was a little bit of a local connection to Jamal Tinsley, also on that team, a former Iowa State Cyclone. I know that kind of was the, living in Iowa, where I was in Northwest Iowa, that was like the one of the things, all the sports talk radio things were, you know, Tinsley, former Cyclone, even though he was nowhere near any of the action, it was all a part of it. But Jermaine O'Neal's kind of that lost figure of basketball in a way too, because he was in that same draft class as Kobe Bryant, and he was, you know, one of the, he was right from high school to the NBA. Can you imagine this? There was a conference in South Carolina that, at one point in time, there was a sophomore 6'11 Jermaine O'Neal playing for Eau Claire High School in South Carolina. There was, at a different high school in the same conference, there was a shooting guard by the name of Ray Allen playing in the same conference, who is a junior. And then a junior at a different high school before transferring to Farragut was Kevin Garnett in South Carolina. All three of those guys grew up within like a 60-mile radius of each other. I mean, and look at, I mean, and South Carolina is not the first state you think of when you think of high school basketball. And Ray Allen probably could have gone to the NBA too, right out of high school, but he went to Connecticut. The other two obviously went pro. But it's like you look at those careers. Allen, Garnett each got their championship. They got their championship together with Boston, and then Jermaine never kind of got to that point, and largely because he got labeled wrongly. I think Skip Bayless was one of the first ones, and I think Stephen A. Smith. And I watched the Malice at the Palace right when it came out. But it's been a few weeks, so I've had a lot of things go into my brain. But he got labeled one of the words that I hate the most in sports talk radio and sports broadcasting, and that is to call someone a thug because of, you know, of a fight or something like that that happens. there's such a negative connotation, and it's such a racially motivated word, even though people will try to say that it's not. To call someone a thug is basically an educated person's attempt to belittle someone and just call them a street violence person, like a gangbanger. And Jermaine O'Neal and both Meta World Peace, Ron Artest, whatever you want to call them, they got hit with these thug labels, and in a lot of the cases were never able to really overcome that. And whether it was David Stern in the NBA, whether it was other general managers, Jermaine O'Neal is an executive producer on this project, and I thought that he did a really good job of trying to kind of exonerate how they were really the victims in this, and the security by the Detroit people, they were not prepared to handle any of this, and they honestly didn't want to handle it. They wanted harm to happen to these Pacer players, and they were stuck in that tunnel. And you know,
that was the worst part. I mean, I remembered as I'm watching this, the melee ensues. They're in the stands, they're on the court, but really, to your point, as they're heading to the locker rooms, that's where that bottleneck happens, and it just gets terrible. How about the 96 NBA draft? Just let me humor you with some names.
Because O'Neal was like 17, wasn't he?
He was number 17. Kobe Bryant was picked 13. Pick in 96. So this is like
by the Hornets. Didn't he get drafted by the Hornets and they traded him to the Lakers?
That is correct. Your first round pick, 1996. So I'll just go kind of
give me the team and see if I can guess.
Well, all right. So we'll go 1 through 10, maybe just quickly. So first pick was the 76ers.
That's not 96. Iverson.
Allen Iverson. It's AI, 100%. Then you've got the Toronto Raptors.
Vince Carter.
Marcus Camby.
Oh, UMass.
Yep. Sharif Abdul-Rahim went number 3 to the Grizzlies.
From the California Golden Bears.
And Marbury went number 4
from the
Bucks, then to Minnesota.
Do you remember how big
Allen? Ray Allen was the 5th pick.
Do you remember how big of a deal though Stephon Marbury was coming out of Rucker Park in New York and then going to Georgia Tech? Like, he was supposed to be the thing.
I would say he had a pretty good career. Number 6, Antoine Walker.
Kentucky?
This draft was just, this draft was loaded. Eric Dampier is in there. Kobe, as we mentioned.
Peja Stojakovic.
How about number 15? Who went 15th in this draft?
Who's the team?
This is crazy. 15th pick in the draft. Hold on, I just lost it. The Phoenix Suns.
Amari Stoudemire.
Steve Nash. Is this the most loaded draft class of all time? You could debate it. Number 20, I can't pronounce these names.
Zrunas Ilgauskas.
Yes.
Like, I'm not even looking at it. I'm just guessing.
Absolutely stacked draft class. So a lot of talent, a lot of great basketball was played out of this class. Malice at the Palace. It's so interesting. There's two sides to every story and with everything in life. And that's exactly what they examine here. I, for one, never a big David Stern fan. The punishments were ridiculous. The treatment by the media. Could you imagine, Joel, if this happened today? Holy moly.
Well, the thing too is
everywhere.
The thing that would have happened today, though, too, is you would have had, you know, cell phone cameras of the people by the people who were causing the problems. You would have seen all of that was leading up. They're kind of like in that preseason Rams Chargers game over the weekend where the fans got into it with one another.
I saw that.
I mean, they were able to people had her, the woman who threw the beer, they had her Instagram account, Twitter account blown up all over social media 25 minutes after it had happened. People knew who she was. They knew where she worked. They knew who her husband was. So it's like there's more fan accountability today because of the technology that's available to us all today. As were this, I mean, one guy was like, he wanted to get in a fight with a pro athlete to try to sue them and get a payday out of the deal. And he said it to his buddies prior to the game.
The lack of remorse is just disappointing. All right. Tough battle because you're putting up kind of a legacy, you know, the veteran with Hard Knocks, been around the block for a while. taking on this untold series, Untold Malice at the Palace. It's tough. Malice at the Palace is really good, but at the end of the day, it is just one story that is just, like I said, around an hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes long, where you've got this legacy of phenomenal docuseries after docuseries. Even if this Cowboys team, as Joel said, is quote unquote boring, it is still compelling. And you have to imagine, with Joel, three episodes left, Hard Knocks training camp with the Dallas Cowboys will continue to just get better and better. So I'm just going to pick the winner, and it pains me because I selected with the first round pick in the 96 draft. I selected Untold Malice at the Palace, but I think it has to be Hard Knocks on HBO and HBO Max. It's just too well done. It really set the, I mean, if you think about everything that's followed, Joel, like, you would know more than I, but Bill Simmons in 30 for 30 would have to have been inspired by the work that was done on Hard Knocks, right?
You would think. I just think that HBO Sports has just always been kind of the leading edge. You know, some of the documentaries that they've done, like on Muhammad Ali, and there's just so much. They've invested in it. That's a studio that has seen that they can do something well and that there's a niche for it. Was it Gumbel's had his show Real Sports on HBO for a long time.
Super good.
I would be remiss to say, though, that if we didn't, Derek Fisher also in that 1996 NBA draft. And as well as the number 39 pick by the Denver Nuggets, Cedar Rapids Regis graduate Russ Millard, who's maybe a name you don't know, but if you grew up in the state of Iowa, Russ Millard was a big deal coming out of Cedar Rapids and the University of Iowa. So
I'm familiar with that name. That's awesome. What a class. Man, I almost want to, like, rewatch that 96 draft.
We've done this before when we've talked about sports documentaries where we've looked at, like, draft classes, and it is fun to go back and look at all that. We should really... We need to do just a draft related. We went down this thing with the Major League Baseball draft thing with J.D. Scholten. And if you haven't listened to that episode, go back and listen to it. That's one of our best episodes.
All right. There you have it. Hard Knocks training camp with the Dallas Cowboys defeating Untold Malice at the Palace. Check that out, though. It's on Netflix. We are going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more. For including some confessions, some guilty pleasures, some slappy pappy, and just don't go anywhere. All right, friends, countrymen, lend us your ears and lend us your reviews.
Cody Churchill. Apple.
Thank you. Lend us your reviews. Please leave a review. It would be so kind of you if you could do that on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, anchor.fm. Subscribe, tell your friends, interact with the show on social. We're here for you. If you have any suggestions, we'd love for you to reach out. Buffer guilty pleasures. I'm going to go first because I have two. I'm going to go quick-ish because I've already mentioned this, but boy, did it get really good with this episode of American Horror Stories on Hulu. The episode was called Barrel. I don't want to give too much away if you haven't seen it, Joel, but and I know this isn't up your alley, but man, it's really well done. It's a fascinating story. Definitely a little gruesome, a little creepy, but it was one of those episodes that just ended perfectly. You thought they may have been heading toward resolution, and then it just, boom, not go the way that it was perhaps setting itself up for. Honorable mention for me of another guilty pleasure that I'm just starting, but I'm liking a lot, also on Hulu, 9 Perfect Strangers. This cast is ridiculous. Nicole Kidman, Melissa McCarthy, Luke Evans is there. It's I finished one episode. Michael Shannon, Regina Hall. I don't know how they got all these folks together. Bobby Cannavale is there. It's, again, I'm one episode in, Joel, but if you have Hulu, seems like this is just going to get really, really good. That's 9 Perfect Strangers on Hulu, and then American Horror Stories. Also, I feel like I'm just shilling for the Hulu company, but they're both worth checking out, and I'm absolutely enjoying 9 Perfect Strangers. I'll probably watch episode 2 after we finish recording this tonight.
Yeah, I'll join you probably in the I'm gonna have to confess I've never seen any of those, and I'm not gonna do that. So but this is Guilty Pleasures, right? That's what we're talking
about. That's right, everybody.
That is what we are talking about right now, is Guilty Pleasures. And I cannot get enough. It's such comfort food for me to just turn on just old Eddie Murphy movies or just things like that. And I watched The Nutty Professor with my kids this week, and I just love that movie. Like, there's just something about it. And I'm sure there's lots of reasons that people don't like it and whatever, but I just can't get enough of Hercules. And
Sherman.
Just the fart scene at the dinner table is epic. Good. It is so good. I know that it seems like all I like is fart and burp and poo poo humor, but that's not. But it's just kind of good, mindless. The thing I love about it now is I don't care so much about the movie, but hearing that gut busting laughter out of my children,
it's so great.
It is so fun. It is just so fun. And that's why Nutty Professor is probably my guilty pleasure for this week. It's one that I can watch anytime it's on.
Yeah, I can tell you that when that came out, speaking of 1996, holy moly.
Yeah.
Nutty Professor, that particular makes and still would make my mom laugh uncontrollably. My dad, you know, my dad's mom, my late grandma Babe, thought it was hilarious. And there's something to be said about Eddie Murphy playing multiple characters and the genius behind that. And certainly he's had a career full of acting and stand up and Saturday Night Live. But the guy just, isn't Chris Rock a stand up comedian in that? Or it's not Chris Rock.
No, it's Chris Rock. Or is it Dave Chappelle?
I can't remember.
Oh,
I don't think it's either of them. I think I'm doing this very poor. Is it Chappelle? I think you're right. I don't want to get that wrong, but it's so funny. Doesn't he say, like, I don't know whether to smile at you or to kick a field goal? Does he say that?
Yeah, something like that. From that?
Is that right?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. So Nutty Professor, 1996.
Dave Chappelle plays Reggie Warrington, the stand-up comedian.
You're right. It is Chappelle. A very young Dave Chappelle, by the way. Holy moly. I just pulled it up on YouTube. Yeah, so if you're watching, if you're listening to this and you haven't seen The Nutty Professor, check it out. It's great. And yes, it's a remake, but like Joel said, it's enjoyable. That's something I could watch with my kids. That's an excellent point.
I had honorable mention too, as I revisited Key and Peele on HBO, the old Key and Peele sketch show. It's so good. So good.
Absolutely fantastic.
I've never been so humored and uncomfortable as The Slave Draft. I rewatched that episode, and that was just really cutting edge comedy. Just cutting edge comedy. It really is. And those are two guys who've gone such interesting directions since that big break with that show.
I'm so happy that 2022 will give us a new Jordan Peele movie. He's unbelievable. He's just so talented.
It's just cool how those two have stayed best friends too throughout this all.
How could you not? They're just very likable. Buffer confessions. Let's do it. I'm going to be embarrassed with mine already, I can tell you.
Confessions.
If you want to start, you can.
I'll start.
Boy.
So
I feel bad about what I'm going to confess.
I listened to Mark Maron's podcast interview with Matt Damon from a few weeks ago this week, and I kind of found myself revisiting the Matt Damon catalog and just looking at his IMDb, because he's been in so many things, going all the way back to School Ties, which is a movie I've always really enjoyed. And I've never seen Courage Under Fire.
Wow.
That Denzel Washington, I believe, was the director of, as well as a star in Meg Ryan. And I know that that was kind of one of the first moments, because he loses a bunch of weight for this movie. He was critically acclaimed for his performance in that movie, but I've never seen it. And it's really odd that I haven't, because I'm really kind of a ready and willing consumer of anything military history movie, kind of those stories. I like those kind of movies, but I've never seen Courage Under Fire, and I think I needed to confess it, because it was it kind of bothered me when I looked at the IMDb run for Matt Damon there.
If I told you that Courage Under Fire came out in 96, you'd have to believe me, right?
Are you serious?
That's when it came out.
Wow. Welcome to the 1996 podcast.
I just want a quick correction. Edward Zwick, your director of Courage Under Fire, okay, who also did such movies as Glory, About Last, Legends of the Fall, The Siege, Diamond, Defiance, Love and Other Drugs.
The Siege, Under Siege is the Steven Seagal movie, sorry.
Yes, yes, but just a super talented director.
Is Denzel in that movie, though, Courage Under Fire?
Yes, he is in that. You are correct. My confession is not from 1996. It is from 2014. It is one of those movies that I've seen 45% of, and I too was listening to another podcast with Conan O'Brien. Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend had Michael Keaton on as guest. Keaton is brilliant. I have not seen Birdman in its entirety. And I know that it's great because I've seen 45% of it, but I also know that it's super weird. And I'm confessing that I love Michael Keaton. I've seen The Founder, and I've seen Trial of Chicago 7 and Spotlight. And
The Founder is one that we should talk about someday. That was a good movie.
Yes.
I don't know how true it is.
Drastically underrated.
Yeah, really.
And can I just also make one more Michael Keaton point? So randomly, I discovered that Ferris Bueller's Day Off is on Netflix. Didn't know that. Didn't realize that at the end, the sequence where Ferris is racing home, that his dad's license plate is M Mom, like Mr. Mom. And I never realized that. It makes sense since Mr. Mom came out in 83 and it was another John Hughes movie. But yeah, I just hadn't made that connection. But yeah, I'm sorry, Michael Keaton. I haven't seen Birdman.
It's good. And I know I'm an Emma Stone fan too. So it was, I remember going to work. So 2014, I was working with a startup company, and I remember going to work and being like, no, this is actually a good movie. People were like, this is stupid. It's weird. I don't like it. I don't get why everybody loves it. And I remember like championing it at the office, and then it won the Academy Award, it won some Academy Awards, and I kind of got to get the last laugh at the office, but not that those people respected the Academy Awards the same way that I do, but.
No, definitely. Like I said, I will kick the tires on Birdman once again. All right. Before we get out of here, we're going to do some dress socks and Crocs, some tales from the real world, if you will.
Slap it, tap it, wait.
Dress socks and Crocs.
Getting yelled at by kids. It's not fun. It's not fun. It's really tough. We are a couple days away from school starting, so naturally there are a lot of things arriving at my house, which sometimes much to my chagrin. A lot of clothes, a lot of backpacks. Very happy that both my boys, who will be in fourth grade and first grade, have opted for Space Jam backpacks. One is the new Space Jam. The other is the 1996 Space Jam, to bring that full circle. Some t-shirts arrived today, and I didn't realize who they were for. And I may have erroneously handed one child a Chicago Cubs Anthony Rizzo shirt, which I'm going to say this quietly, I wouldn't have ordered since he's on the Yankees. And it turns out that it was for the other kid, and they're both still maybe kind of awake watching Paw Patrol right now. Huge fight ensued, and worst dad ever is me. because I got it wrong. So that's my story and I'm sticking to it. And to confirm once again, Anthony Rizzo recovering from COVID and playing first base for the New York Yankees, no longer a Chicago Cub.
He's back though. He hit a home run last night.
He's back.
Because while you are a Cub fan, I am a New York Yankees fan. So I'm very thrilled that he is playing for the Pinstripes and see if he can maybe help them win another World Series. But
gosh, I hope a super team can win. Those are my favorites.
Well, Mike Stanton, super
teams.
Mike Stanton, as I like to call him, because when he broke into the league for the Marlins, he was Mike Stanton. And then one year he decided, I'm going to now go by Giancarlo. I refuse to call someone Giancarlo after their first year in the league. They were Mike. Giancarlo, I think, is his middle name. And more marketable than Mike, apparently. So
I did not realize that. That is weird. So, I know who Mike Stanton is. I didn't make that connection.
Yeah, no, Mike Stanton became Giancarlo.
I don't like it.
Nope, me either.
I don't like it.
But I'm a Yankee fan. That's a tough situation. I'm fortunate enough that my two boys are far enough apart in age that we haven't had those one has it, I want it sort of discussions yet. And we're also not big Jersey. We're not a big Jersey family. So
it's a t-shirt.
Sure. Fair
t-shirt. You know what I mean? So it's like, I don't know.
And we're t-shirt. Also, we're more college than we are pro. So we don't have sure. The now you can with the name, image and likeness stuff, but we don't have it as much in our house. But my dress socks and Crocs does also have to go with back to school. Everything as well as it's just we had back to school night the other night where kids are bringing everything and just I'm trying to say how to say this nicely. Can we just as a group of parents collectively just calm down? Can we just all take a deep breath and let's not worry about what. Because the school my kids go to has a dress code. Like, let's not worry so much about what shoes are on the dress code. If you feel like you have to ask the question, maybe you don't push it. Like, just, you know, if it closed-toed shoes. I mean, it's pretty simple. Just give your kids some tennis shoes. And I'm sure they love wearing their flip-flops all summer long. But just throw your kid in some tennis shoes and go to school. You know?
They're gonna, are Crocs they're, not on the dress code? You can't wear Crocs?
I think you can wear Crocs.
You can.
I think wow. They just have to have closed toes.
One of these Fridays, I'm going to toe the waters. And it's probably, I should have done it this summer when I didn't have a lot going on. But I thought about, can I ever wear Crocs to work if I don't have a bunch of meetings? Like, would anybody look at my feet? I don't know. Because they're so comfortable.
I'm also such a fan of the school uniform. Like, the school uniform is so nice. And I did practicum at a public school that did school uniforms when I was in college. And it's just so nice that, you know, the shirts the kids are wearing are like $7. The shorts that they're wearing are like $5. You know, you can just, you don't have the rich kids showing off what they can afford and the other kids not. And it's just,
there is something to be said about that. You get 7 of the shirts and shorts.
Yeah. Like in the school that my kids go to, they cannot, it's a Catholic school, but they cannot wear logo branded clothing. Like, they cannot have a Nike polo on. They cannot have an Under Armour visible logo. Now, those two companies do make the school uniform line that don't have any visible logos.
Sure.
But you know, it's so nice. And I guess that's kind of been my takeaways going back to this back to school night is just everybody just calm down. Like, can your kid read? That's the most important thing. How are they at math? I think we as parents, we just get ourselves so bogged down into all these different minutiae that just really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Get them there on time. True. Let them learn. Set them up in a comfortable environment. That's what we need to do as parents because they feed them off our anxiety.
Yes. Teach them to be empathetic, good people. And if they're wearing,
teach them to be winners. That's the big thing, you know.
Yeah,
if you ain't first, you're last, right?
Right.
I'm joking.
I'm with you though. I remember when I too went to private school from preschool to eighth grade. We moved in between sixth and seventh grade, and the school that I went to for seventh and eighth did not require a tie, but the school that I was at from PK to six for seventh and eighth, for whatever reason, the uniform for seventh and eighth included a tie. And I still, to this day, I can tie a tie, not the best at it, admittedly. I can do it. I'm usually never overly thrilled with the result, but I couldn't have I can't imagine having done it in seventh and eighth grade 5 days a week. No way.
Yeah, there would definitely have been a lot of just loosen the knot and hang it back on the hanger for me if that was the case.
And you know who cared a lot about uniforms and restrictive clothing? Jesus. He wanted everybody to wear a tie back in the day. And he wanted to make sure that those were khakis and that they were not jeans.
It's not about that. There's nothing in the Bible that says anything about uniforms. It's all about creating an even playing field. That's what it's about. It's Christian communism.
I just remember as I got older, I was like,
I think that's the difference though between Southeast
are kind of uncomfortable.
Southeast Iowa Catholic School and Chicago Catholic School. I think that's the difference.
Let me just say, I literally last night, because I'm weird, I looked to see how much my former school costs now. Oof. And
12,000, 14,000.
If I had three kids enrolled, it'd be 15 big ones a year.
Yeah. It's so. A fraction of that at the school that my kids go to.
I was like, no, thanks. But yeah, no. All right. We're going to get out of here on the buffer. And we appreciate everybody that's listened.
I apologize for last week. So we did a podcast on Free Guy, and Free Guy was the winner. I had a massive corrupt audio file that I have tried to clean over and over and over again and figure out a way to make it good. And I made the decision last night that it wasn't going to sound good. So I wasn't going to put it out there, because even though we're kind of a casual group, we still want to try to sound as professional as possible. So it wasn't going to be a good listening experience. So I did not post. You need to go see Free Guy. It is a phenomenal movie. So, and it was the winner from last
week. Yeah, I was going to say, so sorry, Ryan Reynolds, because, man, it's so good. But he's fine. And it's, yeah, they're going to probably do a sequel. And it's really like one of the first non-IP original big blockbusters that we've had in a while. I mean, if you think about it, like it was the first non-IP release
that Disney had in 6 years.
Holy moly. That's either shame on Disney or good for you, Ryan Reynolds. You have you own the gravy train, man. Like, it couldn't have happened to a better guy.
So I didn't realize literally. He sold aviation gin for over $600 million. His net worth is estimated at $150 million.
Wow. Good for him.
And his wife's estimated net worth is $75 million.
So they're doing okay. And there's no slowing down, by the way, for either.
I like what they said though, is that they rotate. So she does a project and then he does a project. So that way they don't have to leave their kids.
Yeah, no, they seem like they've really got it all figured out for that level of success. And it's hard to not like him and his wife. So all right, we're going to get out of here. Please subscribe to the Buffer Podcast on Apple, Spotify, and Anchor.fm and leave those reviews. And we'll be back next week with more talk from the 90s, hopefully. Maybe it'll be 1997. We'll see. You never know how things are going to line up. It's kind of weird like that.
Word.